Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're focusing on something incredibly important: using knowledge as armor. We're going to be tackling a subject that I know is profoundly stressful for so many: sickle cell disease in children. Our goal here is to really try to eliminate some of that uncertainty
by providing clear, actionable data.
Exactly. We've consolidated the key sources on vaso-occlusive crises. Those are the acute pain events that, you know, really define SCD.
Right.
And we're going to extract two critical things. First, the specific biological timeline every caregiver needs to know. And second, the 10 vital signs that are absolute red flags.
The goal is for you to feel prepared, not panicked.
Yes.
And that's the mission, isn't it? For the child, the warrior, a pain crisis is just, it's exhausting. It's terrifying.
I can't even imagine.
And for the caregiver, the early signs can be so subtle. They can, you know, they can mimic so many common childhood things.
So what we've done is really filter the clinical research. We've tried to create a definitive checklist that sort of guides you past all that noise.
That's right.
Okay, so to set the groundwork, let's start with that central piece of timing, the thing that dictates everything else. At what age does a child with sickle cell typically go from being, well, seemingly healthy to experiencing their very first pain crisis?
The onset window is, it's remarkably specific, and that's because it's driven by what's essentially a biological deadline.
A deadline.
Yeah. The research consistently shows that children with SCD, they typically start experiencing these vaso-occlusive crises right around 6 months of age.
6 months. Wow.
That half-year milestone is just a pivotal moment for every single caregiver.
Okay, so 6 months is incredibly precise. Mm-hmm. We know SCD symptoms are caused by those sickled red blood cells blocking circulation. Mm-hmm. So why are they okay for those first 6 months? What's protecting them?
They're shielded by what is, well, it's basically a natural miracle. It's called fetal hemoglobin.
Fetal hemoglobin.
It's different from the adult version. And crucially, it doesn't allow the red blood cells to deform into that crescent, that sickled shape.
Ah, so it keeps the cells flexible.
Exactly. It keeps them pliable, flowing efficiently, no blockages.
So as the child grows past that 6 month mark, their body naturally starts making adult hemoglobin, the kind that can sickle. And it dials down the production of that protective fetal kind.
Precisely. That protection just, it fades.
When does it really dip?
The amount of fetal hemoglobin drops significantly between 6 and 9 months. The child just loses that crucial biological buffer.
And that's why the sources all stress that for most kids, the first crisis happens in that window between, 6 months and 2 years old.
Yes. That 18-month window, that is the prime time for a child to encounter their first severe episode.
And this really underscores a point that the sources make about just, you know, being prepared long term.
Absolutely.
Knowing that this window is coming is why understanding the child's genotype, often right after birth, lets families get ready for this long before any symptoms even appear.
Proactive knowledge just minimizes that reactive panic. When you know the timeline, you're anticipating the vulnerability. So let's focus on the actual observations. We've broken down the 10 vital signs into three categories. You've got physical emergencies, behavioral indicators, and then the systemic dangers.
Okay, let's jump right into those physical and acute emergencies, starting with sign number one, which is often called the absolute earliest indicator in toddlers.
Dactylitis.
Swelling in the hands and feet.
This is a classic. I mean, it's a textbook sign, particularly for the youngest warriors, those little ones from 6 months to 2 years old.
And what's happening there biologically?
It's when the sickled cells block circulation in those really narrow blood vessels leading to their hands and feet.
So how does a caregiver distinguish this kind of painful swelling from, you know, a typical toddler bump or a little injury?
You have to look for very specific traits. The swelling is usually bilateral, so it's affecting both hands or both feet, though not always at the same time.
Okay.
The fingers, the toes, they'll look puffy, almost shiny, and they will feel significantly warm to the touch.
And it's painful.
Oh, intensely painful. The child will absolutely react. It's usually the first visible sign of a vaso-occlusion anywhere in their body.
That distinction, puffy, shiny, and warm, that's so vital. Okay, on to sign number two. Paleness or pallor. We know this signals anemia, but how quickly can a parent spot this? And where should they be looking?
The sources say to look at areas where blood flow is usually really visible. So check their lips, the lining of their eyes, their tongue.
The palms of their hands, maybe.
The palms of their hands, exactly. If those areas look pale or even a kind of grayish white instead of a healthy pink, that's a major warning sign.
And what makes this rapid paleness so so urgent in a child with SCD?
It's so crucial because that paleness indicates a rapidly dropping blood count. It's an acute episode of anemia.
So it's not a gradual thing.
No, not at all. The sickling process can cause red blood cells to just break down way faster than the body can replace them. That leads to these rapid, dangerous drops in hemoglobin that need immediate intervention.
Okay, that makes sense. It ties the visual cue directly to the danger. Now for sign three, and this one sounds like maybe the most urgent physical sign, a hard or swollen belly.
Yes. If the child's abdomen feels abnormally hard, or if it just looks a lot bigger than usual, This is the sign of something called splenic sequestration.
Splenic sequestration, what is that?
The spleen, it acts as a filter in the body. But here, it starts trapping all those sickled cells. It causes the spleen to just rapidly enlarge and hold on to a dangerous amount of the child's blood.
That sounds absolutely terrifying. But again, how does a caregiver distinguish that specific hard belly from, you know, normal childhood gas or constipation?
Splenic sequestration usually presents very, very quickly. It's often accompanied by that paleness we just talked about, and the hardness is really pronounced.
So the speed is the key.
The rapid progression is the key. If the child is also extremely weak or just appears very ill, you cannot wait. The sources are unequivocal on this. Splenic sequestration is a medical emergency,
demanding an immediate trip to the hospital.
Immediately. Time is literally blood volume in this situation.
Okay, we've covered the acute physical emergencies. Let's go now to the observational challenge. The behavioral cues that signal deep internal pain, especially in kids who can't talk yet.
Right.
Sign number four is unexplained fussiness or crying.
And this is where we have to tell the difference between just, you know, common crankiness and true agony.
It's not just routine crying.
No, it's inconsolable crying. The crucial differentiator is that the typical comfort measures, feeding, changing their diaper, rocking them, none of it works.
The inability to be comforted is the signpost. Mm-hmm. The pain is just overriding everything else.
Precisely. If that distress persists, caregivers need to investigate. And this leads directly into sign five, which is often a more localized behavioral response.
And that is a refusal to move a limb.
Mm-hmm.
What are the telltale behaviors here? Is it a sudden limp or is it more subtle?
It can be both. You might notice an infant just refusing to use one arm, or they pull away when you try to move it for them. A toddler might suddenly refuse to crawl or walk, or, yes, develop a sudden, really painful limp. If you try to gently touch that specific area, the child will pull away or cry out.
So they're protecting it.
They're protecting a part of their body that's experiencing a vaso-occlusion deep inside the bone or the joint.
And as they get a little older, maybe two or three, their ability to communicate starts to give us, well, clearer data.
A little bit, yeah.
Which brings us to sign number six, specific pain complaints.
Right. Older children can actually start to articulate where the pain is. And the sources highlight that they often use very specific language.
What kind of language?
They might say their bones hurt, or they'll complain of a deep throbbing pain. That really distinguishes it from, you know, a surface scrape or a stomach cramp.
And are there classic locations for these pains?
Yes. The common spots are the large joints and the torso. So back, the knees, legs, arms, chest, or stomach. Recognizing that specific complaint of deep bone pain is an immediate trigger.
Okay, let's move to sign seven, extreme tiredness. Now, I think a lot of parents know that sick children get tired. How do we recognize this level of fatigue as a crisis indicator?
This is more than just tired. It's an extreme lethargy or weakness. The child might be really difficult to wake up, or their activity level just plummets.
They can't sustain play, that sort of thing?
Can't sustain play, can't even stay awake for short periods. While fatigue is a symptom across all ages, the source materials really highlight this profound weakness as a very common early warning sign in older warriors.
What is the signal?
It's signaling that their body is just working way too hard to maintain basic function, probably because of low blood oxygen or an early infection.
Right. So now we're moving into that final category, the high-risk systemic indicators.
Yeah.
Signs that basically scream hospital.
Yes.
Starting with sign number eight, fever. We know a fever is a worry for any child, but what's the specific number? The threshold that turns a normal fever into an emergency for a child with sickle cell.
The clinical threshold is absolutely crystal clear. Every single caregiver has to memorize this number. Any temperature of 38 degrees Celsius,
which is 100.4
or higher, is an emergency in a sickle cell child. There is zero room for deviation, no waiting.
And why is it so urgent?
It's urgent for two reasons. First, that high temperature can physically trigger a pain crisis, But second, and more critically, it signals a possible severe underlying infection.
Because their immune systems are compromised.
Exactly. Children with SCD are highly vulnerable to bacterial infections, and an infection can become deadly very, very quickly.
That specific temperature threshold, 100.4, that might be the most important single number we've discussed today.
I would agree.
Okay, moving on to sign 9, difficulty breathing. When caregivers see fast breathing or cough, what are they really looking for that suggests this is moving into the high-risk chest category?
You're looking for labored or rapid breathing, a cough that's persistent or deep, or specific complaints of chest pain.
Especially if it gets worse when they breathe in.
Yes, especially if it worsens with a deep breath. These are often the first signs of acute chest syndrome, or ACS.
And ACS is incredibly serious.
It is. It happens when sickled cells block blood flow and oxygen exchange in the lungs. It's basically a pain crisis in the lungs, and it can rapidly cause inflammation, pneumonia. It requires immediate, aggressive treatment. It's a leading cause of death in SCD patients.
That really paints a clear picture of the urgency.
Yeah.
Okay, and finally, sign number 10, a systemic distress indicator. Loss of appetite.
Right. Refusing to eat, or even more critically, refusing to drink.
Why is refusing to drink so much more critical?
Well, it signals overall physical distress, maybe an infection or a crisis causing so much pain that child just can't tolerate anything. But if they're refusing fluids, you get into a rapid spiral.
Because dehydration makes everything worse.
Dehydration is one of the quickest ways to trigger or worsen a pain crisis.
So we've covered all 10 vital signs. Beyond just rushing to the ER for things like a hard belly or that fever over 38 degrees, what do the sources recommend as the immediate action for those earlier non-acute signs?
The initial management at home focuses on two key things. First, remain vigilant. And second, ensure the child is hydrated immediately.
Hydration, hydration, hydration.
Yes. Small sips of water, clear fluids, anything to help dilute the blood and reduce the viscosity. It's the cornerstone of managing these issues at home initially.
And I think it's important to deliver that final overarching advice from organizations like the Global Alliance of Sickle Cell Disease Organizations. It's probably the safest advice of all.
It is. If a caregiver is ever unsure, whether it's just gas or splenic sequestration, whether it's just crankiness or deep bone pain.
If there's any doubt at all.
It is always, always safer to see a doctor immediately. It removes that immense burden of trying to make a diagnosis in a high stress moment.
That's such an important point. Well, that wraps up our deep dive into the early recognition of SCD pain crises. If we just quickly recap the most essential time-sensitive facts.
Please.
The biological protection from fetal hemoglobin ends, and the real vulnerability begins at 6 months old.
The six-month mark?
Dactylitis. That swelling of the hands and feet is often the very first localized sign in babies. And finally, the single most critical number to act on is any fever at or above 38 Celsius, or 100.4 Fahrenheit.
That clarity around the timeline and those specific markers can genuinely make a life-changing difference in outcomes.
Absolutely.
And as you move forward with this knowledge, maybe consider this one final provocative thought. It builds on what we discussed about that six-month mark.
Okay.
The transition from the complete natural protection of fetal hemoglobin to this sudden vulnerability. It's a profound biological marker. So the question for ongoing research is this. If nature provided this buffer once, what are the broader implications of mimicking that loss protection, that fetal hemoglobin mechanism, later in life?
So how can we recreate what the body does naturally for those first 6 months?
Exactly. That foundational protective feature is the key focus of gene therapy and new drug development for the warriors of tomorrow.